It's Friday, which means it's time for the Political Power Hour on Point Taken, where the left and right go head-to-head on this week's top stories and issues. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride. Should we talk
about the government? And the answer is always yes to that question. And what the hell? Let's go 90 minutes, right?
Let's do it.
Even though it says Political Power Hour, let's go 90 minutes. Your Kristen is back. She was off yesterday. We have a special guest in studio. Joseph Pecky's off on assignment this week.
Off on assignment. And so instead, in his place, we have Pat Kreitlow.
Oh, hello, hello.
Wait, the Pat Kreitlow?
The Pat Kreitlow.
Or Scott Ross likes to say, TV's Pat Kreitlow.
TV's Pat Kreitlow, former state legislator, founding editor of Up North News, and a longtime Wisconsin journalist who drove all the way from Chippewa Falls to be with us.
It was on my way.
We're going to get some northern knowledge today.
Absolutely.
When I asked you, I was like, I actually think Pat might do this.
Oh, yes. I don't miss a chance. I work indoors. I work from home. Once a week, my wife pushes me out the door and says, go get some fresh air. So she's very happy. She'll be on the pontoon by herself today on Lake Wissota with her sister. I'm out from underfoot. It's a win-win for everybody.
And you guys know each other, right?
We do.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Long time.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Beautiful. He was in the legislature. Got to know him then. Yeah. And awesome. We have a close mutual friend in Scott Ross.
Yep.
Which will freak out some of them on the right who are here and that.
Right. Well, let's have a conversation. We got to talk about the Wisconsin governor's race.
So big week after months of feeling like, what's happening? It now feels like things are happening inside the Democratic race for governor. David Crowley dropped out this week, meaning that there are five left. But not only did he drop out, he also endorsed Sarah Rodriguez. And so now there's questions on, will there be one more with Joel Brennan? And then what does this mean for the race? So, Pat, since you are the newbie, let's get your take on everything that happened this week.
Well, first off, I have to again admit or acknowledge that although I said very early on I did not give David Crowley good odds of winning, I did not expect that he got in this race necessarily to win. He's a young man. He's going to go places, but he had virtually no name idea around the rest of the state. So that's why you jump into a race like this. But he impressed so many people. I'm not surprised by that at all, but he will be on a ballot again in 28 or 30 or 32 when he's still going to be a young man. He won't think so. Trust me. He'll still be a young man, you know, in 32. And you could tell everybody had great things to say about him. He reminded me very much of my friend Dana Walks, an Eau Claire attorney, former state representative. He ran for governor in 2018. Of course, Tony Evers came in and, you know, bigfooted the whole rest of the field. Dana would have been a great governor too, but you can't crack that Madison-Milwaukee market the first time either. So David will be back. And a lot of folks in the Chippewa Valley were very impressed.
What do you make of the fact that both candidates have dropped out, Missy Hughes and now David Crowley, county executive, have endorsed Sarah Rodriguez?
I think they see that there is this divide here. We can get into the whole democratic socialist thing or whatever you want to call it versus the incrementalist. I'm one of those traditionalists as well that says, wait, you know, you're supposed to wait your turn. They see that in somebody like a Sarah Rodriguez. They see somebody being very pragmatic, whereas they see risks with Francesca Hong, who I think is wonderful, but again, you know, comes with positions and statements that some of the rest of the field want to jump in on.
So that's actually a good question as far as having someone who is outside of Milwaukee or Madison on the panel with us today, because you know, I said to Bill earlier this morning, like, I live in one of the most liberal neighborhoods next to, like, east side of Madison, right? Mm-hmm. So the optics of how many signs I see for Fran Hong are going to be very different. When you have conversations up in Chippewa Falls and in your part of the state, how has her message resonated to people out there?
Lightning in a bottle, which I was not quite expecting. I knew she was colorful. I knew she was candid. I knew there was a lot to like about her. I did not expect that many people outside of Madison to right away take to her and say, yeah. And it really taps into something we're seeing, not just in Wisconsin, but nationwide by all voters left of center who they want somebody who's going to fight. They want somebody who's going to drop the occasional cuss word. And that drives people like, say, Senator Kelda Royce crazy, who's been working in the trenches. She said at the state Democratic convention, this is no time for a newbie. A lot of people are ready to go to a newbie in Democratic circles.
So what does that suggest to you, Bill, as a conservative? Her success, again, we haven't had an election yet, for Francesca Hong, and the fact that she seems to be very popular, not just in Madison and in other liberal areas.
I'm going to agree with a couple of things Pat said. The first on David Crowley, he's a young man. He's 38 years old. I think the expectations for him on this race probably were a little too high, and I might have been one of them. a lot of people thought that he would be that moderate person that trade unions and other moderate Democrats or old school Democrats like Pat would have coalesced around towards the end. The truth is the campaign wasn't very good. And so it was smarter for him to get out than to try and play this thing out and either finish really poorly or potentially have to attack one of the other candidates, which could have reflected on his future. So I think Crowley made the right decision. I put that out in a tweet this week. As it relates to Hong, I don't think she needs as much money as the rest of the field. So I said this in a document I put out called Political Power Rankings. She's authentic. Her support is organic. And she's compelling to the base, AOC. I think those things are what separates her. I did not expect her either 10 months ago to be in this position where she, if she's not leading, she's tied for the lead. And now Democrats have a tough choice to make over the next 32 days. Do they try and shorten her up so that she, to prevent her from winning and try and get Sarah Rodriguez across the finish line? And if they do that, what does Mandela do?
Quickly before the break, either of you see another candidate on that side? I think there's, what, five left?
Five.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Anyone else dropping out before the primary?
Not, well, Joel Brennan may drop out once he finds out if this ad buy moves the needle at all. Spoiler alert, it won't move the needle. But you have other people like Helda Royce, who seems to be trailing, but she's been around long enough to know anything can happen. One more thing could come from Francesca Hong or Mandela Barnes, and then they're out, and suddenly her support rises, so she's not getting out.
One more thing being like an Oppo story dropping?
Exactly, yes.
I think Joel Brennan does get out. I mean, all the public polling has him either 2% or less. The math just doesn't work for him. That's been another sort of disappointing campaign, and I don't see him making it to the finish line.
We're just getting warmed up on this Friday edition of the Political Power 90, I'm calling it now. Kristen Bry, Steve Scafidi, Bill McCashin, and Pat Quitelow, our special guest filling in for Joseph Pecky, who's on assignment. All right, lots more to get to. We'll do after this right here on 620 WTMJ. Oh.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry, along with Steve Scafidi, Bill McCashin, and Pat Quitelow is here instead of Joseph Pecky, who is on assignment, as we say.
Yes.
So things are moving. Things are happening on the Democratic side of the governor's race. As David Crowley has dropped out, there's a chance that we could see Joel Brennan drop out. And when you're looking at this and you see people drop out and you see people endorse Sarah Rodriguez, if that's what Joel does as well, how do you convince, especially voters of Hong, that this is not pressure and promises instead of candidates independently looking at their chances and dropping out? Because, you know, it could look like, ostensibly, a coalescing around a certain candidate in order to have a stronger point, stronger chance for a moderate to win over a Francesca Hong, who, you know, some moderates are very worried about her, not her ability to beat Tom Tiffany. And so, whether it's true or not true, there are optics. And so how does one get around those optics?
I don't think you get around. You just acknowledge that they're going to be there, especially in the social media era. You're going to see everything from, you know, the deep state was out to get her or him with the guy in Maine, or just straight up electability. And we like this person, in this case, Fran Hong, but we have to go, can she beat Tom Tiffany compared to a Kelda Royce or a Mandela Barnes or the other candidates that are in there? So it's not necessarily, you know, ideological, but the pragmatic view of how November's election differs from August.
Bill, you've been around politics a long time. Do other Democrats who aren't Hong supporters look at this as, if they're all saying Sarah Rodriguez, or at least these few candidates are out, should we not follow their lead? Is that something that voters would do?
Not necessarily.
No?
I mean, there'll be about 500,000 voters on August 11th in the Democratic primary. Is there enough time? There are 32 days for this coalescing behind Sarah Rodriguez to happen. Maybe is the answer. Well, no, Marquette's poll is actually going to have an outsized role in this particular primary because it's later than normal. It's going to come out until July 24th. At that point, I think we're going to be at four candidates. I think Roy stays in the whole way because she's going to be in the legislature anyway. So there's some benefits to her hanging around. But I think it could be clear at that point that Hong is still very much in the lead and that Rodriguez has not closed the gap. The bigger problem, I think, Steve, for Democrats is democracy was a huge issue for them in 2020 and 2022. Since that time, frankly, primaries really haven't mattered on the Democratic side, whether you're talking about president, how Joe Biden ultimately got the nomination in 2020, or you're talking about the U.S. Senate race here where Mandela cleared the field with 2 weeks to go in the primary, or now Graham Plattner in Maine, or before that, the California gubernatorial race on the Democratic side. Democrat Party bosses have decided the party, I don't care what you voted for in the primary, this is going to be our candidate. And I think that's super problematic for Democrats going forward.
How are you justifying the California gubernatorial in that?
Swalwell was very much in the lead, and they dropped an Oppo research on him.
You think that came from Dems?
100%. 100%.
Oh, I had not heard that before.
No.
So with not that much time, people are already voting. You've got your early ballot.
So I would also suggest if you have your early ballot right now, don't mail it in.
No,
yet.
Don't.
Hang on to it.
That's actually a great point.
Hang on to it until a little bit closer to August.
I always get mine early, but not because I'm going to vote early, but because I don't know what's going to happen on election day. I might be busy, the weather, whatever.
Right, right.
But a day or two before, I will take it to the drop box at my town clerk's office, and I encourage everybody to do the same. Don't put in the box yet.
I just have this feeling more people are going to drop them off right at their county clerk's drop box and not mail them. I just have this funny feeling given all the stuff we talk about with the mail.
Yes.
I like it really in person. I like to actually
you
put
still
it
do
in.
That?
I like in person.
2 weeks.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I used to be an advocate of that, but I'm not anymore. Maybe it's because I was an office holder and I found myself engaged in conversations I didn't want to have.
Oh, that's why I liked it. I learned all the good gossip from my town clerk when I do it that way instead.
I would describe most of that conversation as awkward and stuff I didn't want to talk about, like in the polling place, which is not where that should happen. Let's take a quick break. We've got lots more to talk about. Pat Kreitlaw, Bill McCosian, Steve and Kristen on Point Taken. You know where we're at, 620 WTMJ. Quick break. Bill McCosian, Pat Kreitlaw are experts on both sides of the political aisle, Kristen and Steve, on this Friday as we dissect the week in politics. All right, where are we going here?
Well, we were just talking about our primary here in Wisconsin. Obviously, the bigger national story this week when it came to Democratic primaries was Graham Plattner saying he's going to drop out after the sexual assault allegation was first printed in Politico, and then there was obviously the CNN Jake Tapper interview as well. But he has not, I think as of at least yesterday, but even as of this morning, not filed the paperwork.
That is correct.
Yeah, till 5 p.m. Monday.
Okay, so 5 p.m. Monday. And then, as you said, did you say it on air or off air, as far as there's 600 Democrats in Maine who will then be able to pick?
Well, that's the suggested replacement process, is they'll have a quick convention a week after he drops out. So I guess a week from tomorrow, next Saturday, where 600 people will show up and true party insiders, and they will determine who will be the main Democratic U.S. Senate nominee. And this is after a record 215,000 people voted in their primary a month ago.
So if he doesn't sign the paperwork, what happens?
He's in.
He's
on the ballot.
That's it.
He's the nominee.
But could we, not to make light of the situation here, but can we make sure that there's also pressure on the main Republican Party? They have until Monday at 5 o'clock to convince Susan Collins, get out. We've got our Republican nominee. Yeah. It's a MAGA guy who doesn't have a problem with assault and who probably would vote to keep the Epstein files covered up, and now he believes in the deep state. He'd be a dream, whereas Susan Collins is a big old liability ever since the Dobbs decision.
She also has a lot of power. I think she still chairs the Appropriations Committee.
She does.
It is interesting that you say it like that, because I'm assuming you're saying Graham Plattner could just as easily be a MAGA candidate.
Absolutely can. Now, we see exactly what he is, and he'd have a better chance as a Republican right now than Susan Collins. Everybody likes to paint her as some kind of unicorn. She's not. That magic is done. It was done with her concern about, stare decisis and Roe v. Wade will be here forever. I'm concerned about these justices. No, the justices hosed her. And they overturned Roe v. Wade, and the jig is up, and there's so many women who have voted for her in the past who are going to go, hell no.
So do you think if both scenarios, Graham Plattner doesn't drop out, or any of the candidates who potentially could be appointed, I mean, is Maine still in play?
Yes. I think so. Yes.
Maybe. I think it moves down the list. They're going to try and keep it in play. Pat and I are going to disagree on this. I think if Graham Plattner dropped out on Monday at before 5 o'clock and was on the ballot next Saturday, that he would win the Democratic nomination at their mini convention. I don't think Democrats are ready to abandon him. And I think his base in particular is willing to fight for him. And if you look at his hostage video that he put out when he announced he was leaving, He basically said the establishment is doing me in, right? Which means they're doing you in. And they're going to take away all these things. The truth is, if he stays in, those things are all going to come to him. And he blinked. I think Grant Plattner blinked. He claimed to be this fighter. The oyster Fuhrer turned out to be a puss. And that's what it is.
All right. So who, if it's not him, who is it? Any ideas? You're the Democrat. You tell me.
No, these are all new names to me. And
not Heather Cox Richardson?
No, and not McDreamy. We will not have Senator McDreamy, since the actor's not getting involved either. It's a sad state of affairs. We demand celebrity candidates in this country. They're letting us down, Maine.
Bill, can the Democrats take the Senate without Maine?
No.
No.
That's it, really.
No, like, that's the whole ball game.
So,
it's the whole ball game.
That's why it's so important.
Yeah.
So do you think he will drop out by Monday's deadline?
I think every minute closer to 5 o'clock on Monday is less likely he actually drops out.
I mean,
he finally...
I agree with that.
He likes to call himself a fighter. So.
But I also feel like there's...
That's the brand for him. That's how he got started. And if he stuck to that, I think he could survive it.
I think he's more of a drama queen, and he does it at 4:55 just so we can make a big public scene about
it.
It
seems like he's
also
using this as leverage to help be influential in
who gets picked. I think it's going to backfire on him. But
their party has told him, no thanks. Your opinion's not welcome.
Isn't it amazing we're talking so much about Maine? It's like a little state.
We don't have the level of spice here.
I'm talking about, I know it's consequential in the Senate, in
but
the
also,
Senate discussion,
I mean,
but it's just like a little state.
We have 30 seconds before we have to go to break, but it's like, how much does the drama as it unfolded there taint all the momentum that had been happening for this like democratic socialist left-wing populist movement? If anything,
it's what I always say is it's an eternity from now until November. I say that now. I'll say it a month from now. I'll say it 2 months
days.
From now.
Yeah.
A lot can happen.
All right. We got lots more to get to, including an update on the 7th congressional district since Pat Kreitlow sitting in our studio. And Bill McCosh is here as always. Sounds like music from The Dating Game in the 1970s.
Yeah, what was that?
What is this what we're listening to here? Welcome to Point Taken on a Friday. Yes, even though I had a four-day work week, Kristen, I'm ready to get to the weekend. So that suggests a lot of things.
I think I gave you my cold.
You gave me a cold. I have a serious headache right now, but I'm having fun with Pat Kreitlow, our guest for Joe Zepecki. So thanks for making the long-distance road trip. Bill McCosh's here. He's steady. He's got his son, Kale, here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he was in the studio. Now
He's back having fun.
He's in a producer's room. He's giving.
He can actually talk. If he was in here, he couldn't talk and engage.
So is he the one that beat you in golf the other day? Or?
No, it's his brother.
Okay, I thought maybe there was some embarrassment there, or you didn't want him to gloat.
Yeah, he's in a timeout. Okay. No. Right.
Why are their father and son traveling today together?
It's my granddaughter's graduation party today.
Oh,
so
nice.
Kale came back from D.C.
Tell us your granddaughter's name.
Carlin.
Carlin?
Yep. She graduated from Brookfield East, top high school in Wisconsin.
Love that.
A few weeks back, we went to Italy for her graduation trip.
You did?
Did
you fall in love with Italy?
I did.
Yeah.
It was super hot, though. I wouldn't recommend necessarily going in June unless you love the heat.
Yeah.
But it was awesome.
How are we both old enough to have grandkids graduating high school or college?
Right?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Oof. So it's her grad party today. So Uncle Kale came back from D.C. for the grad party.
I love that. And so welcome, Kale. He's not in the studio, but thanks for hanging out with us. All right. So where do we want to go? Let's go to J.D. Vance visit.
Oh, sure.
The vice president comes to town, 128th refueling wing. I just missed the major traffic jam when he was leaving that thing. Pat, what did that visit mean to you?
I can't take it seriously. I'm sorry. I can't. You can't. They want so hard to talk about fraud.
Well, that was the theme of his talk.
How are you talking about fraud? I mean, did anybody see a single perp walk from DOGE when they were investigating waste, fraud, and abuse? Because, you know, fraud's illegal. So if DOGE had found any, if J.D. Vance were to find any, they want to blame Somalis in Minnesota when it was a white lady from the suburbs who was the mastermind of the daycare fraud up there. Unless you're going to perp walk the guy who's now turning high gas prices into a grift by his own new chain of gas stations, I don't know what we're talking about.
Fraud's an interesting debate because I think all of us in this room would agree there is fraud in a lot of programs and systems in this country.
Are there humans involved? Then yes.
Yes. Yeah. I guess, and I'm in the middle of reading Regime Change by Maggie Haberman and Jonathan Swan, and I'm on the part where they're talking about DOGE, the creation of DOGE, and their investigation of fraud. And I, as I said at the time, I'm not an Elon Musk fan, but there's always fraud, but how you get to the fraud and how you talk about it and how you prosecuted matter. And if we're really going to be serious about this, and I agree with you on the J.D. Vance point, yeah, you're talking about it, but I need a little something that says this is real. And I didn't get the real.
No, because the base, such as it is, they just want to always hear that there is fraud, and therefore it's an excuse to throw the baby out with the bathwater, cut it all because there's fraud. No, you investigate it, you prosecute it. Didn't Vance hold up a photo of some folks who,
right.
But that was another Journal Sentinel piece that
Journal
got
Sentinel
to them?
Piece, and so they were indicted under, well, Biden was still president.
That's what you do, is you investigate and you jail, and you don't turn it into a political platform, because you got to talk about that. You're going to prosecute fraud, not that we shouldn't have these programs that benefit people because somebody might commit fraud.
That's my question for you, Bill. I think fraud, it doesn't matter what administration is in power. It exists all the time in this country. That's what we should be going after, the actual fraud, and not worrying about the politicization of it.
I think fraud in and of itself is a good issue, and it's been around since before Pat was in the legislature. People talk about waste, fraud, and abuse, right? Is it a winning issue in 2026? I'm not convinced on that yet. I know it's in Tom Tiffany's ads, all of his ads. He talks about audits for all state agencies. I'm not sure the average voter understands what an audit is or how that works. But where Pat and I do agree is they need to bring – there has to be more perp walks. If there are, in fact, fraudulent activities going on, whether it's California or New York or it's Minnesota or Wisconsin, that has to occur in the next 117 days to make that a real issue in my mind. I don't think voters are like, yeah, that's rampant and we got to make sure that we take care of that. And here are some examples where it happened, mm-hmm. right?
You need specific examples. And at the risk of pivoting too soon, here's Michael Alfonso, Sean Duffy's son-in-law, up in the 7th Congressional District at their first TV debate this week. And when he talks about cutting government
only
spending.
Only TV debate.
Yes, only TV debate, and one of the few he has shown up at. And on the question about affordability, that is a meat and potatoes issue. How are you going to lower costs for everyday Americans? And he said, we need to cut the budget because our budget, our tax dollars are going for transgender goat surgery. I'll pause.
Is that, just direct, so can, is that a direct quote?
Yes.
Yes.
It was surgeries on transgender goats or something like that. It was that and data centers in space. Which, again, is not a thing right now. If you want to work against or campaign against waste, fraud, and abuse, go for it. But you better be specific, because DOGE did cut a lot of specific things, and all those folks are now a constituency who are coming forward and saying, here are the children that died. Here are the people that lost their jobs, et cetera, et cetera. You're not going to get away with just saying transgender goat surgery.
It's also not helpful that the President of the United States has pardoned a lot of people who have
because Steve and I talked about this earlier this week. So over half of the people that President Trump has pardoned are white collar, whereas for white collar crimes between bank fraud, wire fraud, money laundering. And so I don't know if the question is more of like, how do you square being angry about a certain type of fraud, but not angry about another type of fraud? I don't know. How do you think that lands when people find out that certain people are getting, who owe, $298 million worth of fines and restitution, some of which Trump wiped out. Like, how this is fine, but this is not.
I don't want anyone to misconstrue what I'm about to say. I'm not rationalizing anything. For this to work for voters, it has to be something that impacts them. So these are government programs that are going unlawfully to people who are fraudulent with the monies. I don't know on those. I do know that Joe Biden had the most pardons of any president in history, and he was only there for one term. I know Donald Trump's had some that I don't agree with in this particular term. I think voters can separate those two things because they don't understand what John Q. Banker did, but they understand what the SNAP program is, or they understand what the Medicaid program is.
So it's just a level of comprehension and
100%.
Well, and messaging. The Democrats better message how much is being wiped out, how these fraudsters got away with it, and how many of them, by the way, have written 5- and 6-figure campaign donation checks to Trump or his allies in connection with that pardon.
All right, Pat took us there. Let's go to the 7th Congressional District, beautiful northern Wisconsin, one of my favorite places in the state, and what's happening in that race for Congress. That's next on Point Taken. Still got some time in the first hour of our 90-minute go-around with our guest, Pat Kreitlow. He's a veteran of the Wisconsin legislature and radio and TV broadcaster, and he's serving in the Joe Zepecki role today. Bill McCutcheon here is steady Bill, as always.
Does that make me Timu Zepecki?
seems about
Timu. You bring your own flavor.
All right, let's go.
You're not as angry.
Let's go to the 7th Congressional District.
Passionate. I give him credit for being passionate. Some listeners think he's angry.
You guys did your homework. You watched the debate up there. There's four candidates.
Four Republicans, and then there's three Democrats who will debate next Tuesday.
Right. All right. So what was your takeaway from the debate?
Mine personally, as having been the candidate up there in 2012, was that there was virtually nothing said that was surprising, other than, say, the transgender goats comment from Michael Alfonso. But it was very much, we need to cut spending. We need to support our president. We need, you know, less regulations. Fewer regulations and lower taxes. There was not a lot that was, you know, Northwood specific, to be frank.
What are 7th Congressional District voters, what do they want to hear other than the Trump thing?
In a year like this, they want to hear a little bit of independence. They are still, let's say, supportive of Trump, or at least who they wish Trump was. But as you see in other swing years, like 2006, when I was elected to the legislature, you had a whole lot of people who had voted for George W. Bush, but they were worn out. They either were ready to vote the other way, which is how the legislature flipped like it did, or they just stayed home. And that is the big risk in the 7th district. The reason that a Democrat could conceivably win for the first time since Dave Obey's retirement is enough people who tend to vote Republican just stay home.
Bill, so we have Eben, Baum, Alfonso, Hermening.
Right.
What do you think?
I'm in a full disclosure. I've been a friend with Kevin Hermening for 35 years.
Full disclosure, at same high school as Kevin
since
Hermening.
Since he first ran for Congress against Dave Obey. I've known Kevin a long, long time. Also, full disclosure, I coached Michael Alfonso in hockey.
When
he was 10.
Not for the debate?
No. When he was 10 years old, he played with my son, Cale, who's here on a summer travel team.
Who's better, Alfonso or your son, Cale?
I like the big guy, my kid. Yeah.
He is big. He's taller than
Alfonso
you.
Is a decent player, and he's a good kid. I would say I was pleasantly surprised at all four. I was impressed in different ways with all four of the candidates.
So give us the highlight reel. Why were you impressed with these candidates?
I didn't know Nina Baum. Never met her, let alone I couldn't have picked her out of a lineup. I thought she was authentic. I thought she filled a lane that probably doesn't exist in the Republican Party right now, which is, you know, I'm not necessarily going to go for Trump just because he's Trump. I was impressed with Jesse Eben. I also haven't met her directly. I've been at events with her. She gets a lot of credit for working hard. I think she's somebody that Republicans will end up seeing in a Tiffany administration if Tom Tiffany ends up winning the governorship. I don't think Eben has a path to get through the primary here because she's viewed as a carpetbagger. That's somewhat unfair, but she hasn't
run in the third previously.
Yeah, she ran in the third against David DVO and lost. So I don't think she can get through this one. So I think it's a two-person race, Kevin Hermening and Michael Alfonso. I think either can win, which has got to be a little bit scary to the White House because they've gone all in on Michael Alfonso. But my sources say that the president's also been impressed with Kevin Hermening when he saw him on Sean Hannity's show.
Yeah.
What does all in mean beyond just the endorsement? Are like they?
Well, does the president come to the 7th congressional district in the next 32 days? I doubt that.
Okay.
Does Sean Duffy come back? You know, this is Sean's a personal friend. Another disclosure. I don't know Rachel Duffy. I've never met her. But Sean's been a longtime friend of mine. So I don't know if Trump endorsement's going to carry the weight it is across the country in this one, because there is still a very clear path for Kevin Hermening to win this race.
Well, and it's also just, like we said, it's the oldest congressional,
it is the oldest demographically.
Right. It's older, and does, despite the Trump thing, do most of these voters look at a 26-year-old and say, who's not also from the North Woods, right?
That's actually not true. He grew up in Land O'Lakes.
He did, okay.
Yes. And then he moved to Wausau for high school.
Got it.
And he hasn't voted here for some time. He was in Florida for a while, so he does, and he's living in Sean Duffy's house in Hayward right now, as 26-year-olds are likely to do because they don't have a big work history.
So in the conversations you have with people in your neighborhood, Pat, or your community, what's resonating with them if they're Republicans?
If they are already, you know, fairly deep Trump supporters, that endorsement's going to mean something, but it's definitely not going to be everything.
Okay.
Especially as people look at Kevin Hermening, and if they hear the stories about how Sean Duffy basically browbeat an endorsement out of Donald Trump. I mean, there was a story in Politico about how the White House staff was really annoyed with Duffy working so hard to get this endorsement for this 26-year-old. Kevin Hermening has a much longer history in the district. And again, in a demographically old district like that, the Alfonso, if the Trump endorsement fails someplace, it's going to fail in the 7th, where people go, thank you, Mr. President, that's nice, but we're not going with the 26-year-old.
We got to go to break, but Hermaning, to me, traditional, proven conservative.
Listen, if he would have gotten the Trump nomination, it would have been like, Tom, Tiffany, this race would be over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You picking Hermaning or Alfonso?
I think it's 50-50 between. I think there is a path for Alfonso, but it's. I think he's gotten bad advice from his D.C. consultants.
All right, we'll wrap our first hour with the guests, Bill and Pat and Kristen. And Steve. Well, we're not guests, we're hosts, but you know what I'm saying. After this.
All right, only got a minute and a half before we got to go to the top of the hour news, but we have been talking to Pat Kreitlow, who's here for Joe Zepecki, Bill McCashin always. But Pat, that was a long drive for you to join us today.
It was an easy drive, 260 miles, nothing to it. It was on my way to where I was going.
How many quick trips did you stop?
I had three, actually. Funny that you should
ask. Three?
Yes.
Woo!
But I get that festival discount, you know, at the pump every time, so I never pay full price for the gas. But it was on my way to Lake Tomahawk, where I'm moderating a gubernatorial debate tomorrow with the Democratic candidates. That'll be at the Community Center in Lake Tomahawk, co-sponsored by Up North News.
Love it.
Google Maps just somehow said to get to Lake Tomahawk from Chippewa Falls, you come by way.
This isn't even close on the way.
You know, I really think my Google Maps might have an issue on my phone.
Check your Google Maps, because that's incorrect.
Yeah.
Well, I think they gave you the long route.
I'm going to reset that.
Yeah, we appreciate you making the drive.
My pleasure.
And we joked about it, but you've had like a pretty interesting career, and you're not done yet.
Oh, no. TV anchor, state senator, island dweller, congressional candidate.
What was the best and worst thing about being a TV anchor?
Oh, everything was the best about it, especially when I got into politics and suddenly 50% of the people hated me.
Well, yeah. I experienced that every day, actually.
Were people surprised when you first decided
to because nobody knew my party. I worked very hard to keep that under wraps, and I could have declared either way. And 50% of the people would have said, oh, I knew it. And 50%, I always knew he was on the wrong side or something like that.
That never changes. All right, we'll take a break for news, as Kristen said, and then get back. We have a war we're still fighting, and not much progress being made there. And, of course, we always have the always popular Say Something Nice. We'll see what the gentleman and lady come up with. And, of course, we wrap it up all up with Grab Bag. So, busy next 30 minutes, and then we're going to have some fun after that, just Kristen and Steve. So, stick around for news.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Braun.
Welcome back. We still have another half hour with Pat Kreitlow, who is in for Joe Zepecki. If you're just joining us, he is a longtime reporter and journalist in Wisconsin, founding editor of Up North News. Candidate, legislator, done a lot of different
pontoon
things.
Pontoon captain.
Here from Chippewa Falls.
I have the hat. Oh, nice. Mostly for when I play Yacht Rock. Yes.
Are you a big Yacht Rock guy?
Oh, huge. Absolutely.
I just saw Christopher Cross at Summerfest. So I'm all in on the Yacht Rock.
I heard that. That's an endorsement.
I just finished Michael McDonald's autobiography. Absolutely.
I'm sang with Christopher Cross, yes.
Okay. Ooh, and also Bill McCashin, you're here too.
I am here. Yeah.
All right. So this week, are we under the impression that the Memorandum of Understanding is over?
No longer understood? No.
Oh, I think it's over. Okay. I mean, the president as much as said that.
But he also says a lot of things.
And yeah.
There's pivots that happen.
We'll see. My son just came in and reported that the Qataris are on their way to Iran to try and have some more discussions. I think we are where I recommended, and I'm no military guy, 7-8 weeks ago, start bombing again. And I think that was the right move. I don't think these people are trustworthy. I don't think their leadership will ever come to an agreement with the United States. So I'm not exactly sure how this ends. I'm glad that there's commerce going through the Straits of Hormuz now. I'm glad that we almost knocked out the shipping control tower that the Iranians use. Looks like there's still some standing, so I hope we get the rest tonight. But I don't think they're going to deal with us any other way than if we continue to hit them. And sadly, that's what it's going to take. But good news is we haven't had to put boots on the ground.
So politically, do you think we're still in this come the midterms in November?
I don't want us to be. And I've said that all along. I want this to be over. I want gas to be at or near $3 a gallon. Below is even better. I think those are dynamics that work for Republicans in the fall. But I'm not sure those wishes of mine are going
to
come true.
To be over or to win it?
Win it. And gas prices come down. That would be position A for Republicans.
Iran is right where they want to be. this is chaos, and they want chaos. They don't want anything to be stable there, and it will not be stable for the rest of Donald Trump's administration, because he will not either make the full commitment, like boots on the ground, to actually bring them to, you know, some point of surrender or regime change. And so we'll have these skirmishes back and forth for the next, you know, 2+ years, and gas prices will be volatile the whole time until then. And we will continue to wonder how many of our American troops really have been injured by the various missile attacks that hit bases in that region.
What is, do we have an accurate count right now?
I saw 13 was the number of dead service men and women.
It's been that way for since February.
There are stories about there's more casualties and more injuries than they're reporting. And I've said that on the air a couple times. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I don't think any of us are going to know.
And they can't, they want to cover that up, but here's what you can't cover up. Those big red numbers outside of Quick Trip. I mean, it was 348 last week. I hit 3 Quick Trips on the way down here today, and I could only dream of paying 348 a gallon. That's what told people, oh, yeah, it flared up in Iran again.
All right, so, Bill, as a conservative, if this lingers, and if gas prices remain high and all the tangential things with prices related to the Strait of Hormuz and not being able to move commerce, that's not a winning proposition for Republicans.
I think incumbents in general, you're seeing this on both sides, are in trouble. In this cycle, I think voters are very frustrated and they're very angry. And you saw 3 incumbent Democrat Congress people lose in New York a week ago. And there's a projection that 3 more are going to lose in the next 3 weeks in different primaries in other states. Same thing could happen on the Republican side. So the president won on some very specific promises, including, you know, no endless wars. Well, here we are. And now there's something that's impacting all of us. Pat's right. On the gas prices, that's something we see every day. So you can say whatever you want on TV. I know what I'm paying for gas. I know that I just paid $4.19 at an urban station here in Milwaukee this morning after I picked Kale up at the airport.
Wow.
That's the biggest number I paid in 6 or 7 weeks. And the other thing you can't tell me is why, when the war ended, didn't prices go down faster? But as soon as it restarted, boom, they went up 30 cents almost overnight. Mm-hmm. That seems like gouging to me.
Well,
interesting. Interesting.
What do you what do we think about? What is it? Freedom Fuel?
Freedom Fuel.
Are we
talking
about Freedom Fuel?
the new chain of quote unquote independent stations that somebody from Gas Buddy actually looked up the paperwork and found that it is tied to a very generic sounding corporation, which has also been behind licensing other Donald Trump memorabilia or business entities or things like that. So, yeah, it's a line of Trump gas stations that's undercutting the local marketplace for now to bring in business. So here's a guy that has found out a way to increase everybody's gas prices and yet still make a buck off them.
So, but they're not
in Wisconsin. He couldn't, or she couldn't, do that because of our Unfair Sales Act. This is where David Crowley was actually right.
So where are these operating right now?
A few southern states. They formerly a lot of Sunoco stations.
I didn't even know that was a real thing. I thought it was a fake
story.
Because the way
I
did it was phrased at first, because I remember the tweet I saw regarding it was like, this is actually communism. Wow. But it's not government funded, right?
It's not government funded.
It is a private company that is like kind of related to Trump. Yes?
I don't know that it's related to him.
I have no idea. Okay. Anyway, after the break, say something nice. We all put smiles on our faces and suck it up and be nice to each other. That's next.
Yeah. You keep saying your side is better. It's time to
say something nice
about the other side of the political aisle on Point Taken.
Come on, people now. Smile.
All right. Pat Kreitlow, let's start with you since you are a newbie to the show.
Something nice. I have to say something nice about people from the other side of the political aisle.
Yes, those are the rules.
I got a real one for Wisconsin, but let me get a quick one in from Congress. Nancy Mace, because she's one of the Republican members of Congress wanting proof of life from Mitch McConnell.
Okay,
which we need more.
I'm with her on that.
Yeah. Yes, that it's a low bar.
She's crazy. So
I need to talk to him on the phone for 20 minutes.
So did I. It's amazing that happened.
He was so lucid.
Closer to Wisconsin, I would go with Representative Tony Kurtz, who I've never met, but was one of the people that had been championing saving the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Fund. It is something that should not have been caught up in partisan politics. We may disagree on how exactly the partisan politics played out, but there are Republicans who understand the importance of Knowles Nelson and want to bring it back.
It was created by Republican Tommy Thompson.
Exactly. And so I think that everything I've seen is that he's one of the legislators who would say, okay, guys, it's January. We're back in session. Let's just get this done with. So I know it's a couple of weeks now since the funding expired, but because it was in the news, I wanted to call it a Republican who was trying to save it.
All right, Bill.
Mine is Yemisi Egbuwale. She is a commentator on Fox News from time to time, particularly the special report with Bret Baier. She's a former senior White House official in the Biden administration. She has said from the day Graham Plattner became a candidate in Maine that he was a scumbag and the Democrats could do better than him. She was right. And when this came out this week, she was on with Brett again. She didn't spike the ball, but I thought she handled it classily. But we need more people on both sides of the aisle who are willing to call out the bad candidates earlier in the process so voters aren't stuck with them.
Let me piggyback off of Bill because I'm picking the Maine Democrats who made the right call on Graham Plattner. We'll see if he actually takes his name off that ballot. But you have to draw a line in the sand. And this dude, I know he's all popular. He was doing all these great interviews, some of we've talked about and cited. But when you're accused of these types of
credibly things, accused.
Yes. Serious charges. That's not somebody you want to hang a banner on and say that's our guy. And I think Maine Democrats, they made the right call.
All right, mine is Paul Farrow, which maybe wouldn't come as a surprise considering his passing this week. But, you know, I only got to meet him once when I was moderating an event for Habitat for Humanity Waukesha. And it was there I realized that he had been a long time, for decades, a neighbor of my aunt and uncle, John and Barb Rye, in Pewaukee. And so we talked about that. He winked at me. He goes, don't tell your aunt and uncle that we're moving, because they had not broke it to them yet. But I reached out to my aunt and uncle this week after he passed, and they told me this story. So my cousin, who died a couple years back, who had Duchenne's muscular dystrophy. So he was in a wheelchair most of his life. I guess he was in the literature that Corbin was in the literature Paul handed out when he ran for the assembly. And the longstanding joke, because Corbin was not a Republican, let's put it that. Corbin, I think, was left of me. But the longstanding joke forever was that Paul was the only Republican that Corbin ever voted for. And it speaks to
not surprised.
Yeah. And so the friendship that I know he had with my family and getting to see him win, accept the award from Wisconsin Policy Forum at their annual awards last year, and his lifelong of service, you know, too young, too soon, and a really, really great contributor to Wisconsin.
Yeah. Paul Farrell, a life well lived, an example for a lot of politicians and elected officials. That's how you do it.
He was one of one.
Unbelievable collaborator. Great sense of humor, and a smart dude.
Yeah.
Smart guy. He will be missed. All right, after the break, grab bag. Point taken.
All right. Since we got most of the politics out of our systems, let's finish up with some grab bags.
Real quick, I'm going to go first. I'm Italian. Festa Italiana running this weekend at the Summerfest Grounds, Lakefront Grounds, Meyer Festival Park. Go check it out. Food's great. I'll drink some wine there at some point with some of my Italian friends. And I got a quick one for Pat Murphy, coach of the Brewers. The guy just keeps getting it done. This team.
He's the best.
Could be one of the only 21 teams in MLB history since all the way back to have 60 wins by the All-Star break. That's incredible. And we are a small market, low budget team. Pat Murphy, Brewers, well done. Pat Kreitlow.
Question, what is the best state fair in our state, and why is it always the Northern Wisconsin State Fair? I mean, I've been to West Allis. I've been to Marshfield for the Central Wisconsin State Fair, but a little hometown shout-out to Chippewa Falls. That is the Goldilocks of state fairs. Now, too small like the little county fairs, not one where you need two zip codes. This one is just right. If you can ever get up to the Chippewa Falls Fairgrounds, go to the Northern Wisconsin State Fair going on this week.
Oh, it's this week?
This week.
All right, there you go.
All right.
Whether it's a state fair or any festivals at Milwaukee, they're always great activities for the family, and that's mine, about family. My son, Cale, is in studio with us. He's a deputy assistant secretary at the Department of Transportation.
Get on camera. Good-looking dude,
the big dude.
Yeah.
He's home for my granddaughter Carlin's graduation party this afternoon, and Uncle Cale came home, and Aunt Reagan will come from Chicago this afternoon, and so the whole family would be together, even though we were just together in Italy a couple weeks ago. So,
was Cale in Italy?
Cale was in Italy, too.
Well, jump on the mic. What was your takeaway from Italy? Because I know what Bill's was.
It was magnificent. He's right, though. It was a little hot, and unfortunately, I came back to D.C. the week of 100 degrees for five straight days, so I think I had 2 weeks straight of heat exhaustion, but no, it was good. Rome was fun. Then we went to Positano, and then ended in Capri. But overall, it's a good family trip.
Keep an eye on this guy. He's going somewhere.
I think so.
He's also got a good radio voice. Yeah. Is that it? You got more?
That's it. All right.
Kristen Bry.
Mine, well, I think I mentioned earlier this week, I did my first shift over at Kinship Food Community Food Center this week, and it was everything I thought it would be. It was great. I'm going to continue to do it. But I had a specific story that I feel like is emblematic of what we try to do on this show. So I was a greeter, and sitting next to me was an older man named Bill, probably around your age. He and his wife have been volunteering there for about 3 years. She cooks the house. She's part of the cook line for the hot meal. And so we were sitting there talking, and we talked about a bunch of different things, including one of his adult children who passed from cancer a couple years back. And he told me about the bracelet that he wears. And we talked about some of the other people that come to Kinship. And then eventually, like later on in the conversation, he mentions his son and his daughter-in-law, who are huge Democrats. And just the way he said it, so I leaned back and was like, do you guys fight about politics a lot? And he goes, yeah, too much. And it was like, obviously this guy's a Republican, but it was just a feeling of like how many other things we got to talk about and connect on before politics even came into the conversation, and like how that only happens in third spaces like that, when you meet people and you're relating about different things that have nothing to do with politics, and that doesn't happen necessarily online. And so it was something that I'll keep with me. I'll probably get to see Bill again. But it was also, the other indicator should have been when I told him what I did for a living. He goes, you know Mark Belling? I go, no, different station, man.
Now retired. We've got like a minute and a half. So after the break, Chris and I are going to do a fun topic. And I totally chat GPT'd this because she said, let's do something fun. What would you ban if you could? And I'll give you a couple examples. I'm curious what you got. Think about these answers. So one of them I would say right away, political campaign mailers. I take them out of the mailbox. They go into the trash immediately. You got any ideas like that? Or daylight savings time?
Doesn't
that
have
change?
Well, no, but in my case, it is, because what we're seeing in Maine now, a 3-month campaign. Last, we saw the 4-month campaign for the presidency. I've lived in places where they can call snap elections anytime. They can have a vote of no confidence. We don't need campaigns that last a year, 2 years, 4 years.
Interesting.
We can do with 3-month campaigns here if we ever could change the system.
That's a good one. What do you got? Could be fun or whatever.
I would ban both of those things, but I'm going to give a quick shout out to the Brewers. They got better this week with Luis Lara. That guy is lightning on the bases, and Cooper Pratt is coming around. He's batting .329 in the month of July. So you got two 20 or 21-year-old kids that made them better, and they made Joey O better, too.
Yes. Yeah. All right, Kale, jump on. You're young. What would you ban? What would you get? What are you sick of? What do you want to get rid of?
That's a good question. I mean,
you're in politics. I mean, you could choose that one.
You don't have to go political on this.
No.
You know what I would ban, though, is that idea to move the Chicago Bears to Indiana. Though I'm a huge Packer fan, I think it's a disgrace.
It is a disgrace
to,
yes,
to the NFL.
They should be punished.
You don't
want
that as like leverage just to make fun of your friends who are Bears fans?
Oh, absolutely, and I do, continuously.
The Hammond Bears, everyone.
Mm-hmm. As soon as those articles started circulating, I was like, oh, man. I mean, how can you come back from that?
Not a good look.
No, it's not a good look.
Good to hang out. One more comment from Pat. You're our guest.
Well, if you can want to find me, go to upnorthnewswi.com, and I will be moderating a debate with the gubernatorial candidates tomorrow morning, way up in Lake Tomahawk, 9:30. Doors open at 9. The candidates are there from 9:30 to 11, and then they go up to Ashland for an event tomorrow afternoon. So still plenty of time before the primary. Go see and hear from the candidates, because you're going to have to pick one of them on the Democratic side come August 11th.
Will there be five?
I don't know. I don't know.
I think there'll be
no
five.
Guarantees.
You think it'll be five at the end or four at the end?
Four.
Okay.
My prediction. All right. Two, Pat Kreitlau. Thanks for making the drive. We'll have you
Thank
back.
You.
You were great. And we missed Joseph Pecky, but you were fun. Kale, great visit to the studio. Good luck to you.
Thanks for having
Rising
me.
Star. Bill McCutcheon, always popular. Kristen and Steve, well, we do our best. Usually lighten the load on a Friday at 11:35-ish. Just to have some fun. And I totally chat GPT'd this. I do chat. You use chat GPT for a lot of things. A lot of them serious. But I thought, what's a fun thing? And the topic was, what would you ban if you had the ultimate all-powerful?
I feel like this is going to be a strong Steve segment. I feel like there's more things. This feels like a Steve Rules the World type segment.
Nod to that great, great segment that I miss dearly. And people always ask me about. And I brought it back once when you were gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not coming back, but so I threw a couple in here that I thought about, like reply all email. Why does that have to be a thing?
Well, because sometimes you need more people on an email than
just... Just add them individually. This whole reply, I don't like it. I'm just going to... I'll read off the list.
Okay.
I hate robocalls. I don't know why that's a thing. I don't know why we haven't been able to clean that mess up. This one's not big. This is a ChatGPT. HOA rules. Yeah, they're stupid, but that's sort of the game that's played. Airplane boarding rules. My wife and I were talking about this last night because I broached this topic. Board from the back of the plane first. Why you let people sit in the front and then we got to crawl all over them? We got to wait for them. Back of the plane first. It makes total sense, right?
I totally agree. I also don't know how have we not come up with, because in Europe there's two ways to board.
Right.
Or not even just Europe. There's other places that you have the back and the front of the plane doors open so you can just do it faster and get off faster.
Europe, older and smarter and better food and better wine. Self-checkout, this is not big on my list, but some people don't like it. I generally avoid self-checkout. I like to talk to the clerks and cashiers. They're fun.
So this isn't, is this the list, is this a list
it's
that ChatGPT gave
both.
You?
It's both. I combine.
So some you agree with, some you don't.
Yeah. Here's one. This is one I added. Speakerphone use in public areas. No.
So here's a question.
Here's what I almost do. Smack the phone out of their hands onto the ground. Stop. I don't want to be part of your conversation. Stop it immediately.
So do you see a difference if someone's FaceTiming versus speakerphone? Or are they both equally bad?
You know, if someone does it to you, you don't really have control. I guess you could not take the call. But I don't know that there's a distinction there. What do you think?
For some reason, I would feel like FaceTime's less bad.
I feel like you speakerphone calls a lot, though. Do you do that?
Me?
In public places? Yeah.
No. If I'm in public, I usually don't answer the phone.
All right, good.
Yeah.
What about the whole time? I've said this for years. This is many, many editions of If Steve Ruled the World. The idea that we're rolling back and going on our clocks is just archaic and stupid and dumb. Fix it. One thing all year long. Stop doing this. Why do we?
Do you have a preference? Which one?
I just want it to be consistent. I don't care which one.
Okay.
Yeah. I guess I do because I don't need it to be light out at 9 o'clock. Give me 8. I'm fine with that. So whatever one that is that standard time?
So
whatever.
That's not what we're doing right now.
No.
So basically, if we never change it, if we never sprung forward, you would be fine.
I'm good with it being dark at 8. I don't need 9 o'clock. I go to bed at 9:30. So dark.
I will say now that I have a toddler who understands that it's still light outside, bedtime's a lot harder.
Yeah. Let's make it easier on parents. So, well, give me a couple of years. Have you thought of a couple?
I feel like the ones that are like the most aggravating to me. Like I would love to be able to come up with some that are universal but not political, but I feel like the ones that pop up are political because that's what our job is. Yeah. But what would be...
Bill agreed with me on the campaign mailer thing. That's stupid. How much money? It just goes right into the trash.
It just goes right into the trash.
Everybody. Nothing.
Nothing.
Everything is good. Everything's
hunky-dory. This is what I'm saying. Like, I knew this was because I feel like it's... I don't think in these, like, we should just... If I ruled the world, it would be like this.
Yeah.
I remember one time I told you that if I ruled the world, I wish that there was like a audible sound when the light turned from red to green. Mm-hmm. And you're like, that's because you're not paying attention when you're driving. I was like, indeed, that is true. And so instead of getting, I guess you kind of get one because if you wait long enough, you get a honk.
Kathy said this to me the other day. We were driving, I think, to a restaurant last Friday. It's a thing now that, at least more than it used to be, when the light turns green, people start beeping right away.
Oh, yeah, right away.
What is that about?
This is what I would actually... This isn't a ban. This is a creation. I wish there were different types of horns on your car.
Oh, for...
Like, there was a more polite horn, and pleasant. Then there was a F-U horn.
Like, hi!
Yeah, or like, hey, just trying to be polite and, like, let you know versus you're ruining my day. And so I feel like if there was a more musicality to the types of alert that your car could provide.
That's not a bad idea.
That would maybe help road rage because you're like, I'm not trying to like piss you off or tell you that I'm angry, but I am trying to tell you that you're going to back into me if you don't stop.
For a long time, I used to drive my wife, Kathy, nuts with this one too. I wanted to put a rolling thing on my back window that I could type into to give messages to other drivers. I think someone actually created this now. I said, I'm gonna patent this. Just like...
What would you say?
Dude, what are you doing? Focus on your drive, you know, stuff like that, or have a nice day, whatever it is. Just quickly type. But again, that's dangerous. And some of
I would say that's maybe asking for more trouble than you want.
Also, one of my pet peeves recently, if there's a green, a left turn lane with a light, always, always have the green arrow. Some of these things now, they don't have a green arrow. You're in the left turn lane, and it just goes yellow, and you got to wait for oncoming traffic. What's the point of the lane? It should be specialized.
What are you talking? What?
So you have a left, a distinct, divided left turn lane. And in most cases, there's a green arrow that you get to go first, right? Green arrow changes.
Or it's flashing yellow.
Yeah, I don't want the flashing yellow. I don't want to wait for all those cars. I'm in that damn lane. Give me priority. Make it short, then we're done, and then the oncoming traffic can go. Why is there differences based on the intersection? Makes no sense. Engineer, DOT engineers out there, hope you're listening. Why? Texture says green arrow first before yellow arrow. Yeah, green arrow always
first. I mean, I feel like a lot of times that is.
That's generally the rule. But the one, you know why I say this? Because the one that I turn on off of Hall Avenue.
Doesn't have it?
No. And because we have a lot of construction going on with our constant development in Oak Creek, which I'm a huge supporter of, it's done this yellow thing, and I'm sitting there waiting for like 100 cars.
I know I'd ban for profit health insurance.
That's not a bad one.
The other one I'd ban. More than a 20-to-1 ratio between
CEO
highest
pay
executive pay and your lowest paid employee.
I will say this. Yours are very predictable based on how much I know you. She's Chris and I'm Steve. After the break, Outdoor Living Unlimited does a lot of things for us, including sponsoring my outdoor show, but they also bring us the Weekend Review. That's coming up after this.
It's been 1 week since you looked at me. Cocked your head to the side.
A tragedy in Lake Geneva, a red card controversy, the vice president visits Milwaukee, and more. It's the Week in Review, brought to you by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
What we do here is go back.
Hey, buddy.
Seven people were rescued from the water. Unfortunately, there was 3 fatalities of people who were not able to be rescued.
The Bucks make it official, trading Giannis Antetokounmpo and Bobby Portis to the Miami Heat.
No matter where I am, Milwaukee will always be my city, my team, my family.
No one's sitting here today and saying that we're a better team today after trading Giannis.
FIFA is allowing U.S. soccer star Flo Balogun to play in tonight's World Cup game against Belgium. President Trump was asked today if he played a role in FIFA's decision.
All I did was ask for a review. I didn't say you have to do this.
One, is this corruption? And two, is this now become a lose-lose?
A few moments later.
Nope. Okay. That's not going to do it. Team USA gets embarrassed on home soil.
Violent crime is down 8%. This is great news for our community. Weather is hot. So are the streets. MPD is doing our best to get involved in many preventative spaces that we can.
The 3-1 pitch. Here's a ground ball right side. That's going to sneak through and into right field for a base hit. And the first big league knock for Luis Lara is a big one here in St. Louis.
They not only sweep the doubleheader, but they win this season series from St. Louis.
All right, some breaking news for you. Former Milwaukee County Circuit Court Judge Hannah Dugan has been sentenced to no prison time for obstructing an ICE arrest in the county courthouse.
They're talking about how J.D. Vance is the chairman of the White House task force to eliminate fraud.
When we allow that money that ought by rights go to feed poor children, but instead goes to fraudsters, we destroy the social fabric of the United States of America.
This is also an administration that has pardoned the most amount of people for fraud.
Some have argued that removing the old Park East Freeway is a template, just simply not the case for 794.
This is not just about Milwaukee. This is a regional asset.
The Wisconsin Elections Commission is launching an investigation after duplicate ballots were issued for both the spring election and the upcoming August primary.
I want to know what they literally did to cause this to happen twice. You know, what software are they using? How are they exporting it?
Decision Wisconsin, Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley ending his campaign for governor.
Why are people backing Missy Hughes and now him, Sarah Rodriguez?
Because of the establishment. When you look at Francesca Hall, she has made some comments that Republicans are probably chopping at the bit to be able to attack her. If Joel drops out and if Kel DeRoy drops out, I think they're both doing the same thing.
Bonnie Tyler has passed away. Her family says the Welsh performer passed away due to an illness she was being treated for in Portugal.
Paul Farrow, longtime Waukesha County executive, has passed away. He was only 61 years old. He had a courageous battle with a very rare form of cancer.
Cancer was something other people had, but now it's to the forefront.
and I want to know, how can I get advocacy? How can I help people get through this?
Now I'm only falling apart. A total eclipse of the heart.
Ladies and gentlemen, The Weeknd.
Another week is in the books. In the
what
20...
are we coming up next week?
Next week.
I haven't looked ahead yet.
There was something I was going to ask you. I sent you a topic, and now I don't even remember what it was. But we always sort of muddle around the ideas, or whatever that term is. Muddle, right? Muddle is when you mix, right?
Muddle is when you muddle like a cherry into some simple syrup for an old fashion.
Yeah. Because we have our standards that we do throughout the week, but then we always like to mix it up. One of the things I love about doing the show is we have a great guest.
Oh, this is what you sent me. Get your politics off of my stuffed pretzel.
Yeah, it's an interesting story. I don't want to give too much. James, my friend James Whitteson, a great writer, has his Substack pieces about a candidate, in this case, Fran Hong, who, at least if I'm reading it right, just assumes she could do something at an event at a place. But shouldn't you ask first? If you just show up at a place, I mean, and I guess she didn't ask.
Oh, this actually happened with Dr. Oz.
Yes.
Dr. Oz showed up at coffee roaster place. Hawthorne, is that the name of it?
Sounds right.
Yeah. Took a picture. It got posted, not on the coffee.
Yeah.
But that's, and then the owner of the coffee shop released a statement saying, we didn't know they were coming. We didn't know the picture was going to get posted, because obviously there is, especially being in Milwaukee, a fair amount of people who are like, this is a sign that you support this administration.
Yeah.
It's like, everyone just calm down.
Yeah, but I do think you should ask if you're going to show up at a place, right? Ask permission, especially if you're making it.
But also if you're, all right, was she doing an event there?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't just showing up.
It wasn't just like getting coffee.
It was like
a meet and
greet, yeah. Apparently this place has great stuffed pretzels, which I have to alert my wife to that because she loves those.
Okay.
All right, so as you look at the week that we just talked about, we had, you know, obviously the Graham Plattner thing. You and I have talked about this a lot. You were somebody who sort of thought this was a game changer for Democrats.
I don't know if I thought it was a game changer. I appreciated what kind of messenger he was. And
in what way?
I just thought he spoke really clearly, and I thought he delivered, as far as I think what a lot of people are feeling right now, of feeling like they're getting screwed by a certain class, like both, like, you know, politicians who've been there for too long, who have different incentives than just representing their constituency, an upper class that just keeps getting wealthier. Like, I think he was able to tap into some things, and he seemed like an exciting candidate. But I think I said it on Tuesday as this was all happening, it is interesting to catch yourself in the situation and be like, oh, what was I missing? Like, as Bill's grab bag, no, say something nice this week, with certain people, and maybe they had more insider knowledge than I did because they work in Democratic politics, but certain people who from the get-go and like from the jump are like, not this guy. But I certainly was wooed by him.
Yeah, and I think I didn't say this on the show, but it's a missed opportunity because you had a female senator. Might want to thought about putting a woman into that position.
Well, they did. They tried to put Janet Mills, but Janet Mills is also 78, which is also not what people are clamoring for right now.
Yeah, I would say a younger woman candidate would probably make sense. And this ultimately, cause as we talked about with the roundtable there, could cost them Democrats taking over the Senate.
Yeah.
This is the one Bill said. This is the one they need to have happen. Doesn't mean it won't happen. There's going to be a group of people, sounds like 500 to 600 Democrats, who are going to have a convention, which they didn't do for the presidential race. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the magic, and it could still happen. As you said, and I've said, voters are angry. And all of our panelists agree with that. There are a lot of pissed off people. And that makes for a pretty uncertain election day across the country as we get ready for what's going to happen in November. So great shows this week. Great weekend for you.
You feel better. I'll feel better. We'll be fresh as daisies on Monday.
Nothing heals like the sun. I'm looking forward to a warm, sunny weather weekend. You too. News is next.